Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, noted filmmaker D. Chanson Berry is here to discuss his new documentary, Dark Girls 2, which aired this week on OWN. Teen filmmaker Temple Lester is here to chat about her short film on the life of Shirley Chisholm. And singer-actress Deborah Joy Winans is here to chat about Greenleaf and what's next. And in honor of Black Music Month, I'll also be playing songs from the soundtracks of such Black movie classics as Car Wash, The Last Dragon, The Color Purple, and The Wiz. But first, here's an important message from DeKalb County.
This is DeKalb County CEO Mike Thurman. For your safety, for our community's safety, please think twice before going anywhere. Stay home, wash your hands, wear your mask. Don't believe me? Maybe you'll listen to my peoples.
This is Dottie Peoples. And Saints, I need all my prayer warriors to be vigilant during these trying times. We can't assemble, but we can keep the faith and pray. The enemy is tough, yes, but there is a brighter day ahead. Just put on the full armor, including your mask, and we can get through this.
Amen, Dottie. Mike?
Hey, I'm Mike Render. Some people know me as Killer Mike. The killer is COVID-19 right now, and we're walking through the valley of the shadow of death. If we stay the course, we can make it through this. Don't fall for the okey-doke. We'll get through this together by staying 6 feet apart. No one told us the road would be easy, and we've come too far from where we started. Stay home if you can, mask up if you can't.
This public service announcement is made possible by DeKalb County and WCLK.
This is Iyanla Van Zandt, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
My first segment features acclaimed writer, director, and executive producer, D. Chanson Berry. His new documentary, Dark Girls 2, aired this week on the Oprah Winfrey Network, OWN, and is a follow-up to his critically acclaimed 2011 film, Dark Girls. The movie examines colorism within the African-American community and how it has shaped our views and opinions of dark-skinned women. This second installment goes beyond the U.S. borders and follows the journey of dark-skinned women around the world. I caught up with Berry this week during a pre-screening of the film, where he talked about the inspiration behind the sequel.
The first Dark Girls 1 basically presented an issue that people didn't want to talk about to people of color and to the rest of the world, that there was an issue with colorism around the world and here in the United States. But in going through the filming process and talking to more women around the country and then around the world, I found out that the missing piece from this was, what does healing look like for these women? What could it look like, you know, for these women? So in part two, I wanted to talk about the healing, even though the pain is still there, as we recognize with the young girls in the classroom who we interviewed last year here in California. These are babies who are 14, 15, 16, 17 years old, and they're still dealing with it in 2019, 2020. So, you know, Dark Girls 1 opened up the door for conversation, thank God. And Dark Girls 2 wants to continue the conversation in terms of a way of leading them towards healing. So that's the reason for doing it. It's about the healing process.
Berry also discussed what he learned this second time around that he didn't learn from the first film.
I learned so much this time as a filmmaker, but as a human being who happens to be a man who happens to be an African American. I learned so much on this because I had been avoiding Ghana for 30 years, the slave dungeons. Not the slave castles, the slave dungeons. And I knew that once I would go there, I would have an experience. And that's exactly what happened. I took my crew, it was a private tour through the castles or the dungeons to shoot some of the B-roll for Dark Girls, as you saw at the beginning of the film. And all of us had, I took my best friend with me, Eric, who's a photographer from New Jersey. And we all had an experience, but mine put me on the floor. When I got to the door of no return, I was no good. I was weeping. They had to pick me literally up and bring me to the door. And then they had this ceremony. And I can honestly say that, how do I explain this? It's like, I never felt my death and my birth at the same time. And I was going back damn near 4 years, 400 years to the day that we left, August 1619. And that's when it hit me. And the ancestors showed up to show me some things, to let me know that they were there, that they did exist. And it was a spiritual thing for me. It changed my life. All the trips to Africa have changed my life, but this particular one changed my life and changed the film. I end up calling Owen and Oprah and saying that the film was supposed to be done in Cannes for screening in October. And I called them in August and said, I'm not going to be ready because the film has changed. Because I've been changed.
Dark Girls 2 also revealed how popular social media networks like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram have served as platforms where dark-skinned women are often celebrated and praised for their melanin. Hashtags like Melanin Poppin' and Melanin Magic are followed by millions of people worldwide and feature images of beautiful brown, chocolate, and mocha-colored women. Here's what Barry says about the positive healing social media offers.
I think anytime you have social media platforms, you can use it for what you think it should be used for. And I think that this is a wonderful place to use it for the healing process. But we've got to have the right people saying the right things for the right reasons again, and directing people to the right places so they can be healed mentally, physically, spiritually, financially. But they have to be the right people who are the professionals that can help us. You know, sometimes friends and family can help us. Sometimes the church can help us. But sometimes we need to go beyond the church, beyond prayer. We have to put prayer to action. And I think that would help us. But social media is a great place to start. And hopefully this campaign will help kick it off in the right direction.
Barry concluded the conversation with some action items that Black men can do to help Black women heal.
Well, I think that we have to remove a few things from our hearts and our minds. What I mean by that, we have to be able to listen to women, period. Not just Black women, but to women, period. We need to listen and try to somewhat understand their travels. We men always try to fix things. That's what we do, we're fixers. But sometimes you can't fix something that's going on with a woman. Sometimes you have to just sit and listen. That's all you need to do. That's the fixing thing, is to sit and listen and to shut up. Sometimes they don't need to hear from you. Sometimes they just need your presence, your closeness to be there. And that's with anybody, actually. Same sex, whatever. You know, if your partner is in pain and needs something, sometimes it's not always about talking. Sometimes just the presence of just being there is the thing that will be the healing thing that person will need. And I think that, and I say this all the time, I've said it before, I said, you know, we men have damn near destroyed the two things that give us life, the planet and women. And until those two things are healed, we won't be healed as men.
Dark Girls 2 is available now for your viewing pleasure at oprah.com.
Jazz 91.9 WCLK stands with Marietta's Theater in the Square. Marietta's Theater in the Square stands with WCLK. During these difficult times, we're all in this together, even if we must be apart. Up-to-date information about Marietta's Theater in the Square's plan for the future is available at theaterinthesquare.net. Stay in touch. Keep listening to Jazz 91.9 WCLK.
Cause there's a reason to rejoice, you see.
Everybody look up and feel the hope that we've been waiting on.
Everybody's glad,
the sound of being glad.
Freedom, you see,
has got a heart beating
so joyfully.
Just look around,
pull
yourself and check it out.
Can you
feel the... Hey, this is Jasmine Guy, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
My next segment features Atlanta-based teen sensation Temple Lester. The future scientist is enjoying a moment in the spotlight with her new documentary short, Shirley Chisholm, The Good Fight. The film is among a select group of middle and high school students to have their National History Day documentaries screened by the Smithsonian Learning Lab. I caught up with the Midtown International School student to chat about the inspiration behind the film and more.
My inspiration from it was... I did last year in sixth grade, so I'm in seventh grade going to eighth now. But in sixth grade at my school, we were required to do a competition called National History Day. And we had to choose like a topic that happened 15 years ago or more, and then choose like what we wanted to do it as. So I chose to do that one as a documentary, and it was on the Lost Boys of Sudan. And I went to, I won at school, regionals, state, and then I went to nationals. And I got the chance to do that again, but when I was at nationals last year, it's in DC, so I got the chance to go to the Smithsonian African American Museum is what I call it for short. But I got the chance to go with my parents, and a few people from school were also there. And they had an exhibit dedicated to Shirley Chisholm. And I really remember kind of my mom telling me about her when I was much younger. But it really, like, I just kind of, she was in the back of my head that I saw this. I was like, they had already told us what our theme was this year, which is breaking barriers. Mm-hmm. And so my mom was like, that would be a good idea for breaking barriers. So she ended up being on my list at the beginning of the school year because I chose to take an elective class on it in the afternoon on National History Day. And she was at the top of my list. It took me about 2 weeks to figure out who I wanted. I had Black women that you don't really know about in history. And Shirley Chisholm ended up being my top pick because I wanted to share her story in a way that you can feel it. And I knew that people knew who she was, but you don't, like, know who she was and who, like, what she did for us and how she represented everybody. And I don't think I could really get that down in 10 minutes. There's 10 minutes that your documentary has to be 10 minutes or less for the National History Day competition. And I wish that it could be more because there's so much more I could explain about her. But yeah. So that's how I basically got my inspiration about her. I saw the exhibit dedicated to her, and that museum is also very incredible.
Wow. And so is filmmaking your passion? Is that what you want to pursue for the future?
No, it's not. I would love to be a scientist, a talk show host, but filmmaking, doing documentaries is part of hobbies that I like to pursue. I like to really, making movies seems like a lot of fun. And I would love to have documentaries of mine in the future on future historians that I would do, like, on different places like PBS or the History Channel, because I love watching documentaries on there about people who helped history. The History Channel has this series where it's like the men who built America. So if there was the food who built America, and that's when I started really, like, seeing a lot of, wow, this is how I could do it. And one thing that really encouraged my documentary to have, there's a lot of background music on it to say, like, what's happening in that moment. And what really inspired me for that was The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan and the Bulls documentary. And that was a phenomenal documentary on ESPN. I really loved it. It deserves an award this year, to be honest. It was so incredible because that really inspired me of how I should have my background music on it. And so just watching different channels, like I watch documentaries on Netflix, on Amazon Prime, for example, and I watched a documentary with my mom about Atlanta and East Lake. So I know a lot about watching films and understanding how to take it, even if you can't go and record or go talk to the person. You know how to take who they are and kind of feel who they are and do a lot of research on them and feel connected to the person that you're doing or the event that you do.
So you were under a time constraint of 10 minutes and you were able to pack in a lot of information. How can you describe or explain your process of how you did that?
Okay, so it was a long process of cutting and editing. You have to find the right clips to go with what's happening because your project isn't just about you speaking and saying what's happening. You have to have firsthand footage, people who may have looked up to her. Like I did a personal interview with Representative Hank Johnson. He's in Congress right now. He's from my district. And I got the chance to talk to him because he's in one of the organizations that Shirley Chisholm founded for Black people in Congress. So it was really incredible to talk to him. And I have a lot of footage of her over the years. For example, I have a documentary that is on YouTube, many different things posted it, but it was her at an old age after she had retired talking about all the different things she went through. And I was so like, that documentary was so good, but it was about 20 minutes long. So I have to find the right pieces and find the right places. So that's really the hardest part because you could put everything in the, like I use iMovie, so you could put everything iMovie, I could record my voice, find the perfect places for my voice, and it may end up being over 10 minutes. So I have to find the right places to cut it, especially if I get feedback from the judges from each level. I have to find out where can I put this and what can I cut out to make it more like what the judges say I need to improve.
Wow. And what did you personally learn? This is your first film, correct?
This is my second film.
Second film. Okay. So what did you learn differently this time around that you didn't know the first time around?
I learned how to put more background music into it. My first one didn't really have that much background music. And I learned how to tell the story better and how to make the person really feel. Like you said, you cry. A lot of people did say they cried. So I try to make them feel like you're there or you're watching her or you're right next to her. So that's what I really was a change, what I learned from this documentary.
Check out the full conversation with filmmaker Temple Lester at WCLK.com. Hey, Upfront listeners. If you like today's program, then become a WCLK member. Simply go to WCLK.com and click on the red donate button. Your monetary contribution is what keeps shows like Upfront on the air. That's the red donate button on WCLK.com.
Hi, this is Cece Winans, and you're listening to Upfront, hosted by Ray Cornelius.
The season premiere of the popular OWN series Greenleaf debuted this week, and social media was buzzing about all of the drama. Here to give us more insight on this final installment of the series is my last guest, television and stage actress and singer Deborah Joy Winans. She's here to chat about her character, Charity Greenleaf, the previously announced Greenleaf sequel, and what's next for her career. Check out a portion of our exclusive conversation.
So I have to ask, you know, I want to say our very first interview was the first season of Greenleaf. Mm-hmm. So now years mm-hmm. later, you know, here we are. Did you get to accomplish everything you wanted to accomplish for Charity, this character? We grew to love her. We didn't understand her at times. Right now, I'm kind of mad with her right now. But did you get to accomplish everything you wanted to for this character?
You know, not everything. Not everything, but what I did find in her is that no matter what happens, no matter what you do, it's never too big a mistake to come back, to figure out. There's nothing that she did that she can't figure out a way out of. She's a real fighter. And I think when we finally get to the end, we recognize that, because I've seen so many things that say, oh, I want Charity to find her happy ending. She needs to find her true love. She needs to find a new love. And I think she does. It's just not in the way that you would expect. And so that makes me happy. Is it everything that I wanted to do with her? No, there's a few other things. But the fact that she learns this about herself is that was the biggest thing. And that makes me very happy.
You've been with this character for 5 seasons now. And so what did you enjoy the most about bringing her to life? And were there times that you were given instructions to go one way and you said, no, I think she would go this way?
Let's see, what did I enjoy most about Charity? I enjoyed her naivete. I enjoyed her her heart on her sleeve. I enjoyed her mistakes. I enjoy the fact that she's human, and she allowed people to be okay with themselves. I think that people see Charity and sometimes they get mad because they're like, why would she ever do that? But she's also, you know, doing things that we ourselves have probably thought about wanting to do, but didn't have the courage to do it. You know, so I love all of that about her. I've had just a few moments, I guess, where I've said, oh, I don't think she's there anymore in season 3. I said, well, no, I think she's past that. I don't think that's who she is. I think that she's grown because, you know, she did this, 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 and this. And we are really blessed because we had creators and writers that were like, oh, well, you know what? That makes sense. Yes, take that away, add that. Because they recognize that they've given us such beautiful words and then we've lived it. And so they always take into consideration things that we feel that we've learned about our character and where they've grown and what makes sense to us for them versus what may have made sense on paper initially to the creator and the writers. And but that's been very seldom because they've been so spot on. And oh God, season 4 was just, I had a good time, season 4. I had no complaints about season 4. I just thought it was real to finally dig into, you know, this anger that Charity has felt towards her sister, this anger that she has felt towards her parents for not really seeing her and listening to her and understanding her. And I think that finally in season 4, when Bishop tells Charity, well, yeah, he's nice, but let's wait until Grace. Well, once Grace gets, and then when Grace has, and it's like, I'm not going to keep putting my life on hold for Grace. And the fact that you are willing to ask me to do that lets me know I need to make my own decisions. I need to make my own choices. And are they great choices? No. Would I do that? No, I wouldn't go against the family, but I get it. And I'm proud of her for doing something and not just being told, well, your dreams are irrelevant right now. Just go sit down and we're going to deal with Grace. She's pursuing her dreams at whatever cost. And she made a choice. You know, a lot of people just say, well, this is what I feel like I want to do, and this is what I feel like I've been called to do. But when someone tells them, no, you're not, they just sit in the corner and say, oh, okay. No, Charity is like, no, these are the dreams for my life. And if you don't believe in them, that's fine, but I do. And so she made a choice, not a great one, but she's got to live through it.
What can we expect in this final season? Because as I said, you know, leaving season 4, I was just like, oh, Charity.
So poor Charity.
I'm just like, okay, I need you to get it together. So I know you can't go into too much detail, but what can we expect?
Well, tonight, you will see, it's hard. It's hard for Charity right now. She lives at home with the people that she betrayed and hurt so very deeply. And she works at this church with a man that betrayed and hurt her very deeply. And so she has to find a way to minister to people, which is what she has been fighting for. But she's got to find a way to do it from a pure place while trying to tiptoe around the people that she's hurt and let this man that has hurt her know that she's not some pushover. And she's there to do her job, and she will do it efficiently. And so you're going to get a feisty, broken, trying to mend relationship sort of Charity. And that's hard. It's a balance that she's trying to find. And let me tell you, she does not always find it. And it's really good.
So there was a recent announcement of a Greenleaf spinoff. And, you know, for those of us that enjoy the show, we were just like, whew, okay. The story continues. Have they released, or can you talk about that? Are you going to be involved in that spinoff?
I don't know. When they told us that a spinoff was happening, we were like, and so we are super excited. Whether or not I'm a part of it, the fact that the Greenleaf universe lives on is really exciting to me, because I think that the fans were extremely hurt by this final season announcement, and they're so involved. They care. They love these people. They love these people as much as we love these people. And so to have the universe expand and continue is really, really exciting to me. I certainly know that Charity could have some more to say and more things to do, but we'll see. We'll see. I don't know.
Now, you know, you come from gospel royalty, and I don't think I had ever asked you this question before, but what was your family's response to this character and to the show? Like, were they calling you like, Deborah, what's going on with Charity? Like, what's next? Like, you know.
I definitely got a few calls. They were mostly, because it was before the show aired. It was before we even started shooting. There was just a simple log line of what the show was, very small description. And that description wasn't enough. And so some of my family was like, what is this? Is this about the church? Is this against the church? I was like, no, I promise. And I think that was a lot of concern for the Black church community, because we do hold our church very dear, the foundation of it. But I think what we really needed to get back to is what the church is truly meant to be about. And so this show is not meant to harm the church or make the church look bad. It was simply to allow people to see real people who have real faith and have real struggles.
Check out the rest of my conversation with Deborah Joy Winans of Greenleaf at WCLK.com. Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I would like to thank all of my special guests, Dee Chanson Berry, Temple Lester, and Deborah Joy Winans. Please join us next week for an exclusive conversation with living single actress Erica Alexander as she talks about executive producing Don Porter's new documentary, John Lewis, Good Trouble.
Don had been thinking, how can I do his big interview? Where will I put him? How will I approach it? And she one day said, I know how to do this. And she said, I'm going to put him in this amphitheater. And we're going to put screens all around him. And then he'll be able to watch his life. And I have to say, when you put a man who has that big of a legacy and persona and personality in front of big screens, suddenly his to himself, he's taken back and sort of bowled over by the cinematic experience.
That's Eric Alexander next Saturday, July 4th on Upfront. I'd also like to take this time to thank our engineer, Jami Wellman, and our voice of casting buzz and entertainment news, Reva Blue. Today's show is dedicated to the memory of WCLK's assistant station manager, Tammy Nobles.
If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.